Good evening, everyone. My name is Colleen, and I am an alcoholic. I get it. Thank you. When they asked me to speak, the only thing I could think of was like that huge room at the Hyatt almost a year ago, and I was like, well, I don't think I could do that. But I look out here, and it's like there's not a lot of people, and that's cool. I like that. Anyway, my sobriety date is April 15th, 1991. It hasn't got anything to do with IRS income taxes. It just happens to be the day that I got sick and tired of being sick and tired. And the way I got to Alcoholics Anonymous is the way that everyone else got to Alcoholics Anonymous. It was hard and bumpy road. Just because there isn't a lot of you out there doesn't mean I'm not nervous. Whoa. But anyway, I started drinking when I was 14. You know, it's like I knew that when I took that first drink of alcohol, it would do for me what nothing else could do for me, and that was make my life go away. And I wanted my life to go away. I was everything that my father said I was. I was ugly. I was stupid. I was nobody. No one would ever love me. No one would ever marry me. And for 14 years, that's what I heard. I was supposed to be a boy when I was born. Oops. And it just started out. You know, the cards were stacked against me the day that I was born. And today, that's okay. But then it wasn't okay. And the first drink that I took, I had a blackout, and most of the subsequent drinks after that, I blacked out, and I liked it that way. I made it through high school, and nobody thought I would. I think I only made it through high school because I drank. It was easy to stay at home and work and drink and not have to worry about anything else. I started working. I never had a problem with working. I had a great work ethic. But when as soon as work was over, I was drinking. I liked it that way. When I finally was 18 years old, I went on vacation and I went up to Wisconsin. And that was a great place because I was 18 years old and I could drink there. You know, it was like in Illinois, they don't let you drink here until you're 21. That was a bummer. And so I had a good time up there. I moved up there. I met my first husband up there. And see, somebody would marry me, and that was great. He was wrong. My dad was wrong. And we went into the military, and I moved to Tacoma, Washington, but I kept drinking. What they say about, you know, changing people, places, and things, all I did is change the scenery, and the alcohol came with me. Life was very hard for two very immature alcoholics in the military, and so that marriage didn't work out, and I came home, and then I got this great job. I could work 4 to midnight, and less than five minutes away from my job was a bar, and it was a pretty clean bar, you know, and everything, and that was cool, and I spent 2 years in that bar, and I really went downhill from there. I mean, I started doing cocaine, which I never thought I would do. And I got really, really sick really, really fast. And I met my second husband, who was really, really sick. And he had been really, really sick for a really, really long time. But that was where the insanity of my disease really became insane. I mean, it was horrible. You know, I mean, he was the scariest person. Here he was an ex-convict, you know, and I was like really sick, and I was like, oh, I'm going to change him and he's going to be okay and all this, you know, that did not happen. And, you know, it was like he wanted a second chance. It was like, oh, just give me a gun. And so Well, it's a good thing that nobody did, because I might have used it on them. It's the first time that I ever, you know, went through abuse, physical abuse. I went through a lot of mental abuse. All my, you know, growing up years was mental abuse. And even at this time, my father still had a great hold on me. And, you know, but it was like, I could not retake responsibility for my actions. My life kept getting sicker and sicker. I was 28 years old, and I woke up one morning. I ran away from my second husband. I spent 2 months running away from him. He is chasing me with a gun, and I was doing everything I could to stay away from the gun and him. And, you know, this was the insanity of it. And I wasn't raised this way. I had wonderful, wonderful grandparents, you know. And my mom was a good person, and I was not raised like this. And here I was. I had this maniac chasing me with a gun, and I was like, God. But it still didn't sink in. It still wasn't there. So here I go, you know, I'm 28. I wake up, and what have I got? I got a 1974 Buick LeSabre in mint condition and nothing else. So I think that I have to have something, so I go buy a house, right? I go buy a house. But I'm in a sicker relationship, and I put his name on my house. Well, needless to say, he ended up with that house. I left. It was like, but it was because of that relationship and where I was at the time. Finally, in that relationship, I was drunker than hell one night, just drunk. And I'm screaming at him because I put his name on my savings account, and I'm putting all my money in there for the house payment and everything. And I go to make the house payment, and there was no money in the account. And I'm like, where's the money? Well, he spent it all on cocaine. So there was my house payment. And I went berserk. And in that moment, I realized that it was me. That was the first glimpse of honesty I had ever had in my life. It wasn't them anymore. It was me. It couldn't be, if only they would, then everything else would be okay. That's not how it worked. And I went and I had to get a lawyer because of my second husband, and she ripped me off, but she gave me some great advice for ripping me off. She told me I needed to get counseling, you know, and so I went and saw a counselor. It cost me $600, but hey. And so I went into counseling. And this counselor, you know, it's like, I was not honest with this counselor. I did not tell him that I had an alcohol problem. That would be like admitting something. And I could go to a bar and admit that I was an alcoholic, but it was safe there. I could admit that I had an alcohol problem in a bar because everybody else in the bar had an alcohol problem, and they all knew what I was talking about. Yeah, me too. Have another, you know. But I cannot admit this to the counselor, you know, and he kept bugging me to read this book, and I'm like, yeah, you know, have another drink, yeah, I'm going to get to that book. But finally I went and I bought that book. And God was working my life, and I did not know it. And I picked up that book, and I started reading it, and it was Toxic Parents by Susan Forward. And this was my second honesty in this whole thing. That book told me that it was my dad that was sick. And it wasn't me. I mean, even though I was sick, you know, it gave me the opportunity to say, it wasn't me. It wasn't me, you know, and that was the greatest relief. Because, hi Mary, sorry. And it wasn't, you know, I could look at it and say, wow, he was the sick one. And I'm sick today because of him, but it wasn't all because I wasn't born a boy. And the second thing that book told me is I could hate him. And the minute that I read that, this wall of anger and ooze and just horrible feelings just poured forth out of me. I never felt anything like it. You know, the whole time I was growing up, people would say to me, why are you so angry? And I'm like, I'm not angry. What's your problem? You know, and it was like, and I never realized until that time just how angry I was. But then, you know, it's like I didn't have like a support group. My support group was, you know, an 8-pack of mini genuine drafts. That was my support group. And Everybody kept saying, don't drink, don't drink. But nobody was telling me what to do with this anger. No one was telling me how I was supposed to work through this. And I went to exactly what I knew. And I ended up getting my second DUI that, you know, I had two DUIs. And I don't want to, this is leading me into my recovery. And I don't want to talk about all that stuff, that, you know, the real big bumps in the road. Recovery is my purpose here tonight. I got my second DUI on this toxic green stuff on Halloween. I was a sight. Here I am dressed up like Lady Diver. No, it was Guinevere, that's it. And I had this long blonde wig that was totally a mess by the time the cops got a hold of me, you know. I was driving 94 miles an hour up 47 or some road, I don't know. It was a nightmare. It was a bad experience, and it was an experience that I never thought I would find myself in, but it was very humbling. So that was my second DUI, but that was in Halloween, and like I said, that was Halloween in 1990, and I didn't get sober until 91. So I'm up in front of Judge Pistoli, and he decides, he takes one look at me, and he doesn't like me. He wants to throw away the key. I'm like, well, okay. Nothing fazed me by that point. I just didn't care. So I just kept going on. I kept drinking. But I kept going to counseling, and something was working. God was working in my life. I got laid off from my job, and I went into dislocated workers, and started going to school again. And I don't know, on April 14th, I just couldn't live that way anymore. And it did not matter that Pistilli wanted to throw away the key, lock me up and throw away the key. That was not the point. I did not care about the law. I'm almost 5 years sober, and I still don't. That probably will never change. And that was not the point. The point was I was just totally beat. I had hit a bottom, and I needed help. And I had been to Alcoholics Anonymous one time before that. 5 years before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous for the second time, I went to this meeting, and there were all these people sitting around, and they were crying, and it was horrible. I mean, it was like, oh, my God. You know, I didn't hear one person in that meeting talk about recovery and the good things that were happening to them. And I was like, I know where I can go. I know my cure. You know, if I'm going to sit around and cry, I want to be drunk when I'm doing it. And when I was, after that meeting was over, you know, I'm standing there. I mean, I'm such a sap. This guy, he comes up to me. I'm like, I really feel sorry for all you people, but I'm really not like that, you know. And it's, of course I was. It was 5 years before I really got here, and I was definitely like that, you know. And he points at my chest and goes, admit it, you're an alcoholic. And I was like, I'll show you alcoholic. And I went and sat on a bar stool for 5 more years. So my second meeting with Alcoholics Anonymous was at St. Joseph's Hospital. No, it was at Silver Cross, I'm sorry. And that was the scariest walk across the parking lot that I have ever taken in my life. And that night, I felt the hand of God reach down, take mine, and walk me into that meeting. If it had not been for him that night, I would not have made it into that meeting. And I'm sitting in this room full of people in these green little outfits, you know. I did not get the fact that they were like an inpatient, you know. And and the room was just packed with people, and they were all men. And I could identify with each and every one of them. And I knew when I left that meeting that night, you know, I was like the 49th person to speak there. And I could stand up and say, I'm an alcoholic and I belong here. And I don't know what to do. And so all these people, you know, they came up to me that night, and they were so good to me and so kind to me. And I wanted everything they had. And by the time I got home, I was going to work the 12 steps in 12 days, and I was going to have it all. There you go. But that's not how it worked. And by the time I was 3 years sober, I was still on step 11 and it was okay. But I came in to Alcoholics Anonymous and I went into outpatient, and I had a counselor there, and she kicked my butt for 7 weeks. She told me, you have to go to a woman's meeting. And I was like, I don't want to go to no woman's meeting. I'll get hives, you know. I was like, oh. And she says, we'll be here with the calamine lotion. I'm like, you're a bitch. But I went, because she told me, I mean, she held the dollar sign over my head. She said, yeah, well, I say if you stay or if you go, and I can keep you here, and your insurance is going to quit paying pretty soon, and then you're going to have to pay for it. And she told me, and by the way, you need a sponsor. I'm like, damn. So I was like, oh, I'll show her. The next night I went to a woman's meeting, and I got a sponsor. And I came back and I said, all right, I got a sponsor and I got the woman's meeting, now let me out of here. And she let me go. She said I was ready. And when I started working the steps, I had been reading the big book. It was very confusing to me. I didn't understand all the big words like and the, you know, I was in a total fog. But I started working them and I started asking questions. And God loved those women in that women's meeting because they let me come in there and they let me talk a lot of crap and they let me come back and they just kept saying, keep coming back. And if it hadn't been for that women's meeting, you know, I wouldn't have learned about just letting women into your life, you know? I mean, and that's an important thing for me today. It's like, I would rather be bonding with women than I would be turning wrenches with guys, and that's what I used to be like before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I wanted to sit and drink with the men, I wanted to BS with the men, and I fit in great, you know, but today I can't do that, you know, and today that's great. So I started this recovery process, and I started a journey that was absolutely unbelievable. If you would have told me 4 years ago that I would be where I'm at today, I would have said, no way, no way. I've been trying to get through Joliet Junior College for 10 years. You know, not that hard, two-year degree, 10 years later. And, you know, I was like, yeah, in time. But the night that I walked into my second meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I could admit that I was powerless over alcohol, and my life was completely unmanageable. I was living with a crack addict. I had somebody running around Joliet with my checkbook, signing my name to my checks. That was a horrifying experience. And I didn't know how to get through the unmanageability, but I knew I couldn't drink. And I didn't drink. They said, don't drink. Just for today, don't drink. And I didn't. And it's not that every day got easier. The person that I was living with at the time, he had beer in the house. He had drugs in the house. I threw him out. I said, go. You've got to go. But he came back. And it was the difference between staying in my house with a user or letting him be in the house and staying sober. And I packed my stuff and I walked out. And I don't regret it. It's not on my credit rating, so I don't know. God was working again. Well, a lot of other stuff on my credit rating, but that's not. The stuff on my credit rating is manageable. That wouldn't be. And as I worked with my sponsor, you know, it was like, she was tough. She'd say, okay, tell me about this. And I'd tell her about it, and she'd say, okay, you're done with step one. You can go on to step two now. But she never bothered to tell me how to do it. You know, and I was like, and I didn't get that. It was like, when I came here, it was like, feed me, tell me how to do it. It was like, just being, it was, for me, she made me do all the footwork, every single step that I took it, and if I had a question, she would answer it, but I'm really hard-headed, and even to this day, you know, it's like, I will never ask a question, you know, it's like, I will just keep running into the wall, you know, until it hurts so bad and my head is bloody, you know, and I would come to her and I'd say, I don't get it, you know, finally, and she'd say, I wonder how long it's going to take you. Good things started happening, you know. And I finally decided that, yeah, I guess I had made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood Him. I wasn't sure what that meant, but I was sitting in a meeting one night and somebody said that God could be whatever I wanted Him to be. And I was like, wow, that's so cool. I want to be like the dad I never had. And so my dad today is like the dad that I never had. And when I have a problem, I go to my dad. I go to my dad, you know, and it works for me. And he works in my life, you know, when I don't even realize it's going on. By the time I got to step three, a serenity had fallen over my life. There was a calm and a peacefulness like I had never imagined would ever be possible. I was 29 years old, and I was like, wow. A few months after that, all of a sudden I had this, like, my heart just clenched in my chest, and it was horrible. And I was like, oh my God, what is that? And somebody said, well, that's anxiety. And I was like, no, that's the way I used to live. That's the way I felt perpetually, all the time. I felt that way. I lived that way, you know, and it was like, wow. And God let me feel that anxiety so that I could realize that I didn't feel that anymore. I didn't live that way anymore. And I just kept putting one foot in front of the other, and I just kept going to meetings, and I just kept trying to do the next right thing. It got to a point in my sobriety where I had to work the fourth step. And I started to make a searching and fearless moral inventory, but I was afraid. And one day I'm driving down the road, and I had seen this thing a million times with that little stupid guy on the back of everybody's car window that says no fear. And I grabbed a hold of that. It was like no fear. And every time I had fear, I said no fear. And I turned my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him. Every time I went on with one step, I used all the rest of the steps that I had already worked. Because that's the only way I knew how to continue to stay sober. When I wanted to do my fourth step, once again, I didn't ask my sponsor, you know. I went on the search for the great fourth step and everything, you know. I didn't get it in this book. This was too complicated for my very simple brain. The fog had still not cleared. So I went and I was asking, you know, it's like, how do you do the fourth step? How do you do the fourth step? And people are like, shut up already. And but this one old timer, he had 21 years, and he goes, I have a tape for you. But like all alcoholics, he would always forget about it, and I bugged him and bugged him and bugged him. I can be the best little pest that you ever met. You know, I was like, Rich, when are you going to give me that tape? And he was like, so he finally brought it for me. And it was Joe and Charlie. And I sat and I did my fourth step in one night. It was like I laughed and I wrote and it was great. And it was the most releasing experience. Everything that was in my head and in my heart that I hated and I didn't want anymore was finally out on paper, and I just purged everything out of me, you know. It was great. And I called up my sponsor and said, it's done. And she said, it's about time. I was like, damn, I can't win with this woman. So I decided that I would do my fifth step, and she said, okay, come over on Friday night at 6 p.m. You have 1 hour. Like, okay. So I went over at 6 p.m., and I had exactly 1 hour. And I did my fourth step, or my fifth step with her, and I went through my fifth step, and she said, okay, now go home and pray and meditate for an hour, and then look at the sixth step. And this is how I worked my steps with this woman, and they didn't hurt me because I'm still sober today. And I'm happy, joyous, and free. And she didn't hold my hand like I wanted her to, but hey, in this program, we don't always get what we want. I'm still asking him to humbly remove my shortcomings. I still have them. Today, I realize them. And one thing I learned with the seventh step, it's like you don't realize that you have a defect, and once it's pointed out to you or you realize it, you no longer have an excuse. Now you have to do something about that. I hated that. I was like, oh, damn. Now I got to do something about it. But what's good about that is that now I can tell other people that today. And I do. Now that you know about it, you can no longer gripe about it. My sponsor said to me, she goes, okay, now I want you to make a list of all the people that you have harmed and all the people you want to make amends to. And she walking away, and then she turns around and she points at me and she says, but I don't want you to go out and do anything about it yet. And I'm looking at her like, are you crazy? I'm not going to do that. Oh, the ninth step, oof. I did not want to do the ninth step. I was like, but I made my list. And I hung on to it. I figured, 3 months, that's good. And then after 3 months, I went back to her and said, okay, I finally did that, you know. And she was like, about time. But when I started making my ninth step amends, you know, God really started to show me how he works. One of the people on my ninth step was a friend of mine. We were girlfriends. We were best friends. And she hurt my feelings really bad. And but I owed her an amends. I felt like I owed her, and I'm sorry. And I'm walking out of Kmart one night, and she's walking in. And I'm like, hi, how's it going? And a week later, I'm at Kmart, and I look up, and she's checking me out. And I'm like, what are you doing there? So then I'm like, come into Kmart a couple of days later, and I'm like, well, I have to go into the vegetation section, so she won't be there. I'll be okay. And she was there. And I said, okay, I get it. I get this. I got it, God. I'm slow. I realize it. And I went home, and I prayed about it, and I called her up, and I said, I was sorry. I made my amends to her. And she said, you don't owe me an apology. And I said, I owe me an apology. I have to do this for me today. I continue to take a personal inventory every day. If I didn't stop and look at myself, take an honest look at myself all the time, I could very easily go astray. I could very easily become complacent because, you know, this feeling of sobriety and this feeling that I get every day from my God, from the steps, from the people in my life, I could take advantage of that, and I don't want to do that. I always have to look at my motives. I'm a strong one for looking at my motives. Why am I doing this? Do I want to gain something from this? Do I want something from this person? Because if those are the reasons I'm doing this, then I'm doing it for the wrong reasons. I got involved in service work when I was 2 years sober. And I learned so much about myself. I learned that I could do a lot of things that I did not realize I could do. I decided that I was going to go back to school. I got tired of working for the pinheads in the factory. And I just couldn't take it anymore. And I knew I had to do something. I knew something in the back of my mind told me that there was something out there for me. There was a path that God wanted me to take. And so I went back to school. And like in 2 semesters, I finished my associate's degree. I was like, wow, I could have done that a long time ago. That had taken 10 years. But I couldn't have. And I decided that I wanted to do this field school. And I wanted to go out and dig in the dirt. And there was this one field school through Governor State University. And I got out there, and here I am. It's raining, pouring rain. I got these light blue jeans on and a peach silk shirt and peach sneakers, you know. It's like, and he took us out to the site. He goes, I wasn't going to do this, but I decided to do this. And he started digging, and I fell in love. I, you know, it was like dirt comes out. I can buy another pair of tennis shoes, but this is great. And I found it a place where I might not necessarily fit in, but for right now it was okay. So Bob told me that I should go to NIU, and, you know, it's like I always put things in God's hands, but I never really believed that I'm worth it. And I never thought that I would get into NIU. I thought this was like a big place, you know, wow. And I learned later, but, you know. But I made it in there. They accepted me, you know. I was like, wow, they accepted an alcoholic. Do they know what they're getting into? But I went, you know, and it's like, and a whole world opened up to me in a whole new journey, you know. And I don't know how I managed to do it because I, you know, decided to take Oh, I can take 20 hours and plan an NIU or an NIA spring conference. There's too many NIs in my life. NIU, NIA, you know. And I could do this. God did it. I didn't do anything because I was crazy. But what I learned from that conference and planning that conference and doing that service work is that I had the opportunity to organize, to plan, to be a part of a team. And that's everything that it was. And along the way, I found some of the most wonderful old-timers, the most wonderful alcoholics that I would ever meet in my life. Because of that conference, I met Donnie, and he gave me a black marble. The first meeting I ever went to with the guy, he gave me a black marble, and he said, here, if you ever use this instead. I was like, well, what am I going to do with this marble? Swallow it? You know, I don't know. But I took the marble, you know. And he started to help me, you know, he took me wherever I wanted to go for that conference, you know, when we started planning that thing. And I learned so many things from him. Joe W., I learned so much from Joe. You know, I got my humbleness from Joe. I would go to meetings with that man, and he would sit and talk, you know, very quietly. And I later found out that he's like crazy and hell on wheels, but those meetings that I went to with him, I saw everything I wanted to be. I wanted to be just like him when I got sober and grown up. And the teamwork and the group conscience and everything that I've learned in this program, it all culminated in that spring conference. I learned in that spring conference that I can still dig my heels in. You know, you guys are following the hotel rules so nice and everything. I didn't. We wanted a hospitality room downstairs and the hotel said we couldn't, and I did it anyway. I wanted to have a hospitality room by all the different plates, you know, they were by all the rooms and everything. Saturday morning I get a telephone call and I was like, well, I have to take responsibility for that, but that's what I wanted and that's what I wanted these people to have. And that was okay. It was like, in the hotel, they want Alcoholics Anonymous to come back. I was like, wow, cool, you know. And I don't still follow the rules quite so well sometimes, and I might never, but I know that I continue to do the next right thing when I follow God's will, that He works in my life immeasurably. I am so grateful to even be asked to do this, that I can stand up here today and tell you all the wonderful things that are going on in my life is amazing, because, you know, I'm going through some difficult times right now and I could be standing here telling you how terrible they are, but I have nothing but love and gratitude in my heart, and it's because of this program and it's because of what you taught me as I work these steps and I continue to work them. Sometimes we have to feel a lot of pain in order to grow. I believe that. I hated the saying, no pain, no gain, but it's true. And I accept that pain today and I work through it. One of the cornerstones of my recovery was the fact that I can work through things today. I used to spend so much time and so much energy working around them. How could I get around them? You know, and they told me it was the most simple concept, you know, and it was just like being an alcoholic. I always have to make things so much harder than they are, and I wanted to work around it, and they said, go through it, and I was like, go through it, but that mean I have to make things right, and I didn't want to make things right. I don't have to live in denial today. I remember the day that I walked into the sunlight of the Spirit. I spent so much of my life in a black tunnel. And everybody said that there was always a light at the end of the tunnel, and I never believed anyone, never. But as I started working through these steps, and I started to grow, and I started to quit walking on eggshells all the time, like waiting for the next shoe to drop, the next boot to drop. I started to see this light. And one day, miraculously, I woke up and I was in the sunlight of the Spirit. I could see it. And I was like, wow. I can live today without all the fetters and all the garbage that I drug around for so long. This May, I will graduate from NIU with a bachelor's degree in anthropology and a minor in art history, and I worked really hard for those. When I walk out of there, I'm hopefully, if the winds are blowing my direction this semester, I will have a 3.7 average when I leave there. And I discovered something about myself. I can sculpt. I always wanted to know, and this was a perfect opportunity. And I took these classes, and I was like, wow, and my hands just started doing it, you know, and it was like, it's God. I take credit for nothing today, nothing. It's all God. He works through me. He works in me. I have no control over it. I just keep going. I had something happen to me this summer that was very difficult. Many years ago, I spent so much time trying to get pregnant. I wanted to have kids. I wanted a family. And I couldn't have kids. And there was no reason why I couldn't. I just thought, well, you know, I drank so much alcohol and I did so many drugs that this is just the way it's going to be. And I couldn't accept it. I spent a lot of time drinking because I couldn't have kids, you know, and it was like, well, there was chasing my tail. And I came into this program of Alcoholics Anonymous and I accepted the fact that I probably wouldn't have children and it was okay. Whatever God had in store for me, it was going to be all right. And I went on with my life and I went on with my sobriety and I tried to reach out and help other alcoholics and I just kept putting one foot in front of the other. I knew God would put children in my life somehow. Well, this past May, May of 95, I got pregnant, but I didn't know that I was pregnant. And I took a fall. And I had x-rays, and they had me on this pain medicine and everything. Well, I was working in Champaign. I got a job. I mean, I am an archaeologist. I'm a recovering alcoholic archaeologist, but I am an archaeologist. I have a job title, not just a label. And I'm working down in Champaign for an archaeological firm, and I'm like, wow, this is a big time, yeah. And I walked across half the state of Illinois and said I could. No, that's not true. But it was very rigorous. And I found out that I was pregnant down there, and I had never been full of so much joy in my life. That was the middle of June. June 30th, I had a miscarriage. Before I had that miscarriage, I told God, if I lose this baby, I can't guarantee that I'll stay sober. But when I lost that baby, I'm sorry, I didn't think about drinking. This program worked. I was grateful to the fact that I could actually even consider another child, that this had even happened to me. I wasn't sad. Oh, I was sad. And it was heartbroken. And it was tragic. But I wasn't ungrateful. And I didn't blame God. And I could put one foot in front of the other and I could walk. And I could say, I am so grateful to this program of Alcoholics Anonymous and my higher power, because without it, well, in the first place, I never would have gotten pregnant. And in the second place, I had a way to work through the pain. And it hurt a lot, and it still hurts. But I have hope today that I'll have children, you know? I have hope today that my life will be full of them. And I never would have had that hope without this program. I plan on continuing my education because it's God-given, you know. I don't want to do anything great. I just want to do something. Because of this program of Alcoholics Anonymous, this Christmas and Thanksgiving, I took meals to two elderly people who needed somebody, and I did that for them, not for me. And that was a wonderful feeling that God would trust me enough with people that He cared so much about to let me be in their lives. Wow. I was like, that was great to me. And I took those meals to those people. And you know, one thing that I've learned in this program is like, I don't have to talk anymore. You know, it's like I can listen. I can sit and listen to people. And that's all I was supposed to know. All I was supposed to do is that I could listen. And they took up all the time. I had to spend an hour with each person. And they told me so many wonderful things. And they left there, and I knew more about them, and all they knew about me was my name, and they probably didn't even remember that after I walked out the door. But I will never forget them. I can reach out to people today who are not only alcoholics, but other people. You know, and that's a great feeling. I am so grateful that I can get out of myself today and not have to worry about me, because I know God is taking care of me no matter what I do and wherever I go. He's taking care of me, and all I have to do is think about what He wants me to do. I had the opportunity to go into a woman's prison. And I'll tell you what, I thought about Pastilli and his key. I was like, whoa, this really could have been me. Since I got sober, I've had a lot of people into my house for the holidays because they didn't have any place else to go, and I couldn't bear to see anybody be alone. One of the things you're not supposed to do is like pick up somebody who's just getting out of jail, but I did it anyway. I didn't care. What are they going to do? Lock me up? Okay, well, I'll just help all those recovering alcoholics or people who need to recover. That's okay. And I brought that woman into my home, and my family accepted her, and that was the greatest experience, you know, to be able to just let people come in, and no one expects anything from anybody else. And I think that's the key, the word accept, expectations. I don't expect anything from anyone today except that they be themselves, you know, and they be honest with themselves, or try to. Some people are constitutionally incapable of being honest. We know that. I've worked really hard at this program, and it's worked the hell out of me. But there isn't one day that God doesn't put a situation in my life or a person in my life that I can't learn from. I don't ever think that God is putting me in people's lives. He puts them in my life. And I have to believe that. It's almost 9 o'clock. And while I'm standing here today, there's some people that I'd like to remember. It'll be almost a year, 2 years now. No, 3 years, I'm sorry. And Dina was killed by a drunk driver one day out of the halfway house. In my big book, I keep these cards, I keep articles, I keep everything. When I look through this book, I see those people who made differences in my life. Dina was a big person who made a difference in my life. There are times when I take this out the article out and I read it. I keep her card in here. I have people in this book who did not or could not constitutionally, they were constitutionally incapable of being honest. Brian P. All he had to do was get sober so that he could have a new liver, and he couldn't do it, and he died on his birthday. And he was the same age I am. Don Irvin, wonderful man. I loved him. He's in here. There's a lot of people in this book, and I keep them here close to my heart, because whenever I start to get complacent, whenever I become ungrateful, I pick up this book, and these people are right here to remind me. We have no time for it. We have to stay by God's side. We have to let Him continue to work in our life. And I try to do that all the time. I want to thank everyone for letting me come up here and speak to you this evening. If I helped one person, well, I'm glad. You probably helped me more. Because it always occurs that after I've spoken, I learn so much about myself and I see my own growth and where I'm going and what I need to work on. So again, you people have helped me. I'd like to thank all my friends. Thanks for coming. And I just hope everyone has a wonderful conference. Thank you very much.